Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's Tech Tuesday. Any NPR addict knows about those driveway moments. Now, NPR listeners with the right kind of car can get an even more connected relationship with their favorite radio station and their vehicle. NPR is the first major news organization to release its own in-car mobile news app, giving Ford drivers voice control over their NPR programming. That means that in certain Ford vehicles, you won't have to reach for the dial or look at your smartphone. Instead, you can just ask the app to play NPR stations or programs like WOSU or All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. is Zach Brand. Zach is the Vice President of Digital Media Technology, Strategy, and Operations at NPR. He was part of the team that earned two online journalism awards for NPR mobile apps and the API in 2010. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Hi, Ann. Thanks very much.
So a recent article from Motor Trend magazine says that the NPR mobile app for Ford vehicles is the first dedicated news application to come from a major news outlet. The same article quoted Doug Van Dagens. He's the Ford Global Director of Connected Services. He said it's proof positive of how an organization can successfully use Ford's Sync API to create a free, interactive, safe and useful app in a short amount of time, 4 weeks to be exact. That is pretty amazing, 4 weeks.
Yeah. The 4 weeks is the development time of actually building out the app, and fortunately we've positioned most of our systems to be able to build new mobile apps very quickly, and Ford was actually a very great partner that had a platform that was easy to integrate into.
How did NPR develop the partnership with Ford?
As listeners out there might imagine, with a whole lot of listening to public radio occurring in the car, we're of course very interested in what's going on in the evolution of vehicles and what they're kind of calling the connected car platforms. And so we've been talking basically with all the car manufacturers, and Ford has the most brand awareness out with their Ford Sync platform, and has a really strong overlap with public radio and NPR listeners. So they were a logical first choice to work with on this connected car platform.
So what is the Sync app link, and what does it do?
So really it kind of brings the power and the capabilities of what people can do on their smartphone into the car, giving you the ability to control it with the steering wheel and with voice controls. So the Sync platform and other manufacturers' kind of connected car platforms bring a wide variety of information and capability into the car that you can imagine, everything from being able to not only find where the nearest gas station is, but maybe look to see ahead of time what the prices are at the nearest gas stations, to the information and entertainment space that we're playing in. Obviously, as NPR News, both news and music across the kind of public radio spectrum. So the capabilities in that space allow you to, you know, first and foremost, if you want to listen to WOSU while you're doing a travel through, you know, a larger trip, you can continue to listen to the station as you go down into Iowa or Indiana or however far you'd have to go that you might lose the FM signal. You could continue listening, or if you're out of town, obviously. Additionally, you're able to listen to archive materials. So if you want to listen to car talk at, you know, 2 p.m. on Tuesday instead of the normal time, you're able to listen to it. And then it gives you some added control, things like pause, and if you're listening to archive material, you can skip forward, some different choices and control like that.
My guest is Zach Brand. He's Vice President of Digital Media Technology and Strategy for NPR. NPR is the first major news organization to release its own in-car mobile news app, giving Ford drivers voice control over their NPR programming. If you have a question or comment for Zach Brand, give us a call. He'll be with us till 20 after, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So they can control the listening experience. Does that mean they can pause and skip and advance, go back within a story?
Yes, that's exactly right. Now, you know, the experience features both kind of live streams, like people who are listening to us right now on their mobile device or through their internet radio. It's a live stream like that. Obviously, you can't skip forward on a live stream. mm-hmm. but ability to pause and go back. And for archive materials, so if you want to listen to news stories that played or entertainment shows that played previously and you go back and want to listen to those, obviously at that point you can skip forward.
I thought it was interesting you can pick stories by topic.
Yeah, so one of the capabilities we had is, so in this case, whether you did it through the menu or if you did a voice command, you'd be able to tell the NPR forward sync, and it has this kind of automated voice. So you press the button, and it says say command, and you say topics, and it says pick a topic. And so you at that point, if there's a particular topic you're interested, whether it's world or politics or, you know, even sports or whatnot, it will then start playing the most recent NPR stories from that topic.
You said earlier you talked about the importance of listening audience who listen in the cars. What percentage of the NPR audience does listen to programs in their cars? What are we talking about there?
It's just under 50%.
Wow. Is NPR working with any other auto manufacturers on similar apps?
Yeah, this is by no means exclusivity to Ford. They were the first partner that we worked with. We have other projects underway as we speak.
Okay. Matt in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hi. I have a question not about the Ford device, but just the mobile app in general.
Yes.
I listen in the car all the time, but I also like when I get out of the car and go somewhere to be able to listen on my iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And I find a lot of times that the programming skips or stops working or buffers a ton. So if I want to listen to Ann Fisher, I'm not able to a lot of times, and I have to switch over to another NPR station, try to find one that does work. Is that something that you guys know about that you're working on? Because I feel like I donate to NPR, I'm a younger person, and I feel like a lot of us would like to use the app if it does work to our needs.
Yes, thanks for that question. Yeah, you know, obviously when you are consuming audio content over your wireless connection, whether it's Edge or 3G or 4G, it's first going to be impacted greatly by the actual size of that connection, how fast your smartphone is connected. And even within that, though, there are different strategies to make sure that the quality is the best it can and you don't get the kind of big buffering and skipping. And we are aware that it's not as perfect as it could be for all streams right now. And so we do have efforts underway to solve this. Now, you know, tech guys always say it's complicated, right? And so I'll say it's complicated, and there are a lot of players involved in making sure the quality to your smartphone comes through. But we do have actually some initiatives underway, even as recently as right before we launched, in the months leading up to it. We identified a large number of streams that simply weren't working. And so before we launched, we were working to resolve almost 15%. We're talking over 1,000 streams in all of the public radio space in America that are available in this app. And about 15% of them simply weren't working. And we've got them all up to at least where if they're in the app, they are working, but there is definitely differences in quality. So we're working on that issue as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, just real quick. Mm-hmm. That the WOSU stream on the app seems to always fail me, but the 90.5 one seems to work a lot more.
We have two public radio stations in town.
Yep.
And so, really, if I want to listen to a national broadcast that you know, Talk of the Nation or something, I kind of have to jump from city to city to find one that is reliable, and some of them just don't work. So,
is that the case? Is it a station?
Yeah, so, you know, one of those challenges, of course, is a lot of people just think NPR, but, of course, we're talking today on WOSU, and there are, depending on how you slice it and dice it, about 300-some entities, close to 400, and almost 800, what you think of maybe station call letters, and over 1,000 streams out there, and each one is potentially managed and run differently, and so you know, I'm calling from NPR headquarters here in Washington, D.C., but we're not, you know, a galactic empire that runs everything. We're producing content here in D.C., but every station produces their own stream. So we're actually working to make sure that the kind of minimum standards and industry best practices are adopted throughout the system.
Thanks, Matt, for your support. Thanks for your food for thought. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Few more minutes left with my guest, Zach Brand, Vice President of Digital Media Technology and Strategy for NPR. Questions or comments? We just have a few minutes left, so get them in quick, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. When executives from Ford and NPR have been asked about future improvements, they say that a more freeform natural language voice recognition system would be ideal but is not yet capable and reliable enough to work with safety and convenience in a car. How,
yep.
What does all that mean?
Yeah, so there are some technical constraints on the system. So it brings a lot of the functionality in from the smartphone into experience that Ford feels as much safer as they present it, where it's steering wheel controls and it's voice controls. But right now, there is a very short list of commands that you can actually give it by voice control. It's not like Siri that recently came out on the iPhone, where you can say, a large number of things in any language you want to do. Basically, there's short lists of one-word commands that you can give the Ford Sync application today.
What about driver safety? I think Consumer Reports said many people are wary of the effect that connected car systems will have on driver safety. Is this an issue for you, a concern for NPR?
Yeah, and we're also, NPR is not really in a position to define what is safe and not safe mm-hmm. in the car, but the world we live in right now today is a lot of people are using their smartphones in their car, which is certainly, if they're looking down at that screen, clearly a lot less safe than using a system made by an auto manufacturer designed to be a safe driving experience. Recognizing what folks want to do, have more control, more choice on what they're listening to, we see the audio manufacturers really working to try to give that experience in a very safe capacity. So that's why we're working with them.
So NPR is the first, but how long before others follow suit? How long before there's competition, do you think?
We know a number of other folks that are working in the space right now. Folks do try to keep it pretty tight-lipped as mm-hmm. to when they're going to launch their applications. But in the next year or two, I'd expect to see other apps from other news companies coming out. That said, this is going to be a very slow evolving space because people don't buy new cars, obviously, as frequently as they buy smartphones.
Right.
So the audience will take before there's a large percentage of people with cars that are enabled this way, it will be quite a few years.
Zach Brand, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Zach Brand, he's Vice President of Digital Media, Technology, and Strategy for NPR. Coming up, we'll move down to Steve Fox, Editorial Director and Vice President of PC World Magazine and PCWorld.com. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Catco, presenting the Rubenstein Kiss with the Gallery Players, a Cold War-era tale of a family seeking justice after being punished for an act of espionage, February 1st through the 19th at the Rife Center. Tickets and details at catco.org.
Support for NPR comes from the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org.
Checking the weather forecast for Central Ohio. Mostly sunny today, a high of 59 expected. Showers could come later tonight, though, with a low of about 46 overnight. On Wednesday, showers likely tomorrow morning, and then gradually becoming sunny again, and a high of 54. Not very much like February, is it? Wednesday night, tomorrow night, partly cloudy, a low of 34. Then on Thursday, mostly sunny once again, and a high of 49. Right now, we have 52 degrees at our studios here on the Ohio State University campus. Don't forget Talk of the Nation. It's here Monday through Friday from 2 until 4 on 89.7.
A Windows smartphone took top honors at the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. That was the first time a Windows phone was named Best Cell Phone of Show. Joining us now is Steve Fox, Editorial Director of PC World in San Francisco, where he oversees editorial content and strategy for PCWorld.com and PC World Magazine. Welcome back, Steve.
Good to be back.
So PC World named the Nokia Lumia?
It's the Lumia, yeah.
Lumia 900, a Windows phone, the best smartphone at the recent Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. So what's so special about it?
Well, first off, let me say that it's really surprising that we would pick a Windows Phone 7 phone, because these phones are nowhere in the marketplace. Right, you've obviously got the iOS devices, on the Apple side. You've got the Android devices running, Honeycomb and things like that, and some even with this new version, Ice Cream Sandwich. Mm-hmm. But people, consumers, have not been flocking to the Windows Phone platform. It's nowhere. The new one, though, this Nokia Lumia, it's the 900. Is just a fabulous looking phone. It's a 4G LTE, so very very fast 4G, and we've done we've had a chance to play with it a little bit, though it's not released yet, and we are very much impressed with how it looks, how it feels. It's got a big screen, 4.3 inches, which that's a sizable little screen.
You said 4.3.
Yeah, 4.3. Yeah. Versus, like, I think it was 3.7. It's got a pretty fast processor. It's got two cameras. One of them is 8 megapixel. And what it really has going for it is the Windows Phone 7 operating system right now, which is a beautiful operating system. People may not be using it because there aren't that many phones out, and, frankly, everyone else has captured the imagination. But we're very impressed with the current version, which is called Mango. So every operating system, whether it's phones or computers, they all have to have some kind of a code name, and this one is Mango.
and the next one is Pineapple.
Are
they doing
the
fruits?
Next one, they're taking a little different tack.
Okay.
The next one is Tango.
Okay.
Right? So, but it's okay. The one after that will not be Bango. Actually, Django. One after that, I'm told, is Apollo. That's Windows Phone 8. So they're taking it in different directions. If you're looking, just to digress a little bit, mm-hmm. here, if you're looking at Android, they have Honeycomb, they have Ice Cream Sandwich.
They did so desserts.
They're going with desserts. Ice Cream Sandwich being, kind of a pretty silly one. But yes, they're in the dessert family. Microsoft, I don't know, they're going from Mango and Tango to Apollo, so I guess they're moving into the Greek gods. And,
okay.
But the Mango update, which came out pretty much the end of last year, really is tremendous. It gives you this full ability to do multitasking, switching among your apps, which is great. You just basically you press and hold this back button and move between your apps. Really great for connecting things like Facebook and Twitter and Outlook and LinkedIn and Windows Live Messenger, and they put them all into one place. But the main thing that people will notice about it is something called the Metro interface. See, there's some more code names here, but mm-hmm. the Metro interface it has a series of tiles. It's a very clean, modern-looking interface. It's quite easy to use from our feelings that we've had a chance to play with it. And it's going to be what we see when Windows 8, not Windows Phone 8, but Windows 8 comes out probably at the end of this year, maybe as early as the third quarter. So Microsoft will be doing something that is the holy grail if you're a developer, and that is bringing together the interface and the operating system on all your platforms. That would mean Xbox, which is already using basically a Metro interface, Windows Phone 7, what will be Windows Phone 8, and then for Windows 8 itself. And there are some real advantages when you have a common interface across devices, because learn once, use many times, right? And it also helps that they actually seem, Microsoft in this case, seem to have come up with an interface that is different from what other people are using, but really intuitive and good-looking.
Yeah, good-looking. CNET tech reviewer Kent German called it clean, thin, with a sharp, super, I don't know what this means, AMOLED.
AMOLED, Yeah. So
okay. Touchscreen.
It's a display. It's a display on the phone. The AMOLED displays are just crisp. They're wonderful. So you know, you combine a truly modern looking operating system, which is streamlined and fast, with some of the best display technology, you're actually going to end up with a phone that, well, possibly people will take seriously. And I say possibly because really this is a two-horse race right now, and Microsoft is looking to make it into a three-horse race. If you look around and kind of try to figure out how Microsoft could compete, because, you know, back in, let's say, November and December, I've seen some figures, especially at the end of December, in terms of Android devices, Android phones, they were activating something like, you know, 700,000 devices per day. That was in December. Apparently, they did close to 4 million new devices activated on December 24th and 25th. So a lot of people got new phones, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the iPhone, and supposedly there were like 6.8 million activations on December 25th. You won't find those kind of numbers or anything even in the ballpark for the Windows Phone 7 stuff. But Microsoft has a plan. One, they have a partnership with Nokia. And Nokia is obviously a very big phone manufacturer, and they have agreed that for their upcoming phones, for phones that from actually starting middle of last year, that they were really going to put some serious weight into the Windows Phone 7 platform, the Windows Phone platform in general. There are reports that Microsoft paid them $250 million to do that, which is a reasonable chunk of change. Microsoft is willing to pay lots of money to get these phones made, and then they're going to compete on price. And this one, this is going to be their secret weapon here, I suspect.
$99?
Yeah, that's kind of a somewhat magic figure there when you consider that a lot of these other phones are, $199,
right,
sometimes even more. So, my guess here is, Microsoft will probably be losing money on these phones. But you do what you can if you feel like you actually have a good product and are trying to get something resembling market share. So that's what we've heard, is that when, for instance, the Lumia 900 comes out, it's supposed to be something like $99 and comes out in March.
We're talking with Steve Fox, Editorial Director and Vice President of PC World Magazine and PCWorld.com. We're talking about the Nokia Lumia 900, a Windows phone. It was named Best Smartphone at the recent Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. If you have a question for Steve Fox, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Maybe you want to know how your phone stacks up to the Lumia 900. Steve can talk about that. We talked about the great price, $99, with a two-year contract, however, exclusively from AT&T. What does that mean? Is this the same problem that the iPhone was having before? They couldn't work with Verizon?
Well, there will be other phones coming out on all the platforms. This one just is the first of this category. And there are other Windows phones out right now. The Samsung Focus S is a really nice-looking Windows phone. And that's, I believe, on AT&T as well. But, yes, we're going to see – you'll see these on all the carriers. And I suspect, although we can't confirm this yet because it hasn't been officially announced, I suspect that all of these will come in at a slightly lower price point. The important thing here is lower price point, yes, but not lower performance, not a worse phone. In other words, in this kind of market, because so many people are using their smartphones as their primary or at least very important computing device, not just as a phone, people don't want to necessarily, they don't want to compromise. I mean, yes, you may want to get a $29 phone if you want it just to be just a phone. But when you're doing all these other things, believe me, there'll be plenty of people watching the Super Bowl on their phone, which, may not necessarily match your big screen TV, but people will certainly do it. So the specs on these phones are very good, and the display is tremendous. And one of the things that we'll see moving forward as we move towards the next generation, which is called Apollo, it's going to actually add it'll add even more in the spec race, so that it will have support for, say, dual core, in other words, more processor power. So it'll add that. There's going to be a lot of it's an arms race here, right? And there, as I said, two players now. That's mm-hmm. become a three-player arms race. When we look at the top 10 cell phones as we've rated them right now, in terms of what's actually shipping, there are no Windows Phone 7s, none at all in that list. It's primarily dominated by Android plus the iPhone. I think that will change, and I suspect that will change sometime around March or April, when the release of the Lumia happens.
Now, we know that it competes on price. Can you compare it a little bit more specifically to the iPhone 4S and the Android-based,
sure.
Samsung Galaxy 2?
I mean, to a certain extent, they're all going to have a lot of similarities. A lot of the Android phones actually, can support dual-core processing, so they may have more power on it. Mm-hmm. Of course, one of the problems you see on a lot of Android phones is battery life, and that's a problem. They've done some interesting stuff on these Windows phones. You can go into a dark mode, which will essentially light up less pixels, on the screen, because when a pixel is turned off, it's not draining battery life. So you should be getting longer battery life from some of these. Obviously, if you're talking about the iPhone, we have things like Siri in there.
Right.
And Siri is an application that sort of intuits what you want. You speak to it, and it'll give you information. Now, there are things like that, on Android, although not quite as advanced. But that is right now, I would say, unique to the iPhone. Well, I would say the big competitive issue when you start to think about these phones and what each one offers, there's what's in the phone itself, and then there is the marketplace. This is where you can actually get apps that work with the phone, and I think this is obviously where Microsoft is way, way behind but striving to catch up. So I was pulling up some stats earlier today. And what it looks like right now is that if you go to Windows Phone 7 Marketplace, which is where you can buy or download free apps or paid apps, they have something like 50,000 apps, which kind of sounds like a big number until you go over to the Android Marketplace. And there's more than 400,000 apps. Or you go to the Apple App Store, and there's more than 500,000 apps.
Mm-hmm.
So apps are the thing that supercharge your phone, because they're not made, not necessarily made by the folks who make the phone. This is developers, smart programmers, put their heads together and figure out what customers would like, and then they create it. And, right now, there's obviously a lag. You think about it, there's, chicken or egg sort of thing. A developer is going to develop an app if he thinks people will download it.
Hmm.
That's how they make their money, right? And if they don't think there's a marketplace, it's very hard to get a developer to, get up in the morning and, I'm going to build a great app, right? Obviously, if you build an app for the App Store, the Apple App Store, you're going to have a shot at some people wanting it because there's such a big base. Ditto for Android. Right now, Microsoft is working very closely with developers, and, 50,000 apps is a good start, and we'll give you most of the basics.
But it just cracks me up. 50,000, give you the basics.
Yeah. Well, the reality is most of these apps, no one will ever see or want,
mm-hmm.
right? But there is so much variety that you can get. You could spend pretty much your entire life just surfing through the Apple App Store and trying to figure out what it is you might want, right?
Exactly. So just for people's information, Nokia
yep.
Corporation is a Finnish multinational.
Yes, they are. They're one of the biggest phone vendors out there.
Yeah.
Very good reputation. This is a big deal. When Nokia back in, I believe it was last February, said they were essentially, going to get into bed with Microsoft, it caused quite a stir because
right.
this is the kind of thing where it means that you will have availability of these phones. Without that announcement, I don't think anyone would have taken this very seriously. And so, you know, suddenly we're going to have, we suspect there'll be a lot of phones, and not just from Nokia. The fact that Nokia said that they were on board with this does not mean they're going to be the only folks who are going to be making Windows Phone 7 or Windows Phone 8 and beyond that. But it is it gives them credibility. I'd say there's one other place, you know, IDC, which is a big research firm. It's actually part of IDG, which owns PC World, so that there I've done my disclosure. But they came out with some very aggressive figures for this year on, you know, millions and millions of units shipped of Windows phones. And a lot of people scratched their head and said, what are they thinking? But I think one of the things that they're thinking here is that though these are primarily consumer devices, if you think about, you know, corporate America and also, you know, worldwide, there's a great deal of comfort in businesses with Windows products. People have been using Windows products for a long time. Your IT department knows how to support them. And then suddenly you come up with Windows phones that will essentially be, you know, at some point as the code base, you know, commingles and you end up with essentially the same code, you'll have, and it'll be a lot easier to support Windows phones if you already know how to support Windows. Again, a lot of businesses do. So I think, though this is primarily a consumer play, if you think about the Lumia and various other phones that are coming out, you know, the Omnia, which just came out in Australia, that's a Windows 7 phone, all with the Metro interface. These are geared towards regular people, but there's a lot of talk about this idea, what they call consumerization of IT, which is, you know, sort of the idea that, you know, people bring their phones in to the office, and they make their, you know, their IT staff and support these kind of things, and suddenly that's how these consumer devices end up in business, whether it's in the enterprise or the small business or what have you. And I think here's a place where Windows Phone has, you know, a certain advantage because of, you know, familiarity.
Right.
Everyone knows how to support it.
I never make the IT people do anything. I ask them very, very nicely.
But that's wise, right?
I was going to ask one more quick question,
sure.
Steve. What about Nokia's environmental record compared to other cell phone manufacturers? There's been a lot of news, you know, a lot of talk in the news recently, of course, about the iPhone and the iPad, for that matter.
Right. Well, and a lot of that is, you know, some of that is being contested, but, you know, for anyone who missed it, a lot of talk about, you know, the conditions in the factories and what they do in terms of, you know, for everything from pollution to who's working on this, right? So, you know, there is a real question about that. You know, and I believe there have been various surveys and other things which, you know, have said that Nokia does okay, you know, in terms of being green. I know I've seen a few things there. I don't think anyone's hands are clean in this. So I'm not going to claim to actually, you know, having never been to the factories myself, and even if I had, who knows what they would show me. You know, it pays to do your research in here. As I said, I have seen some surveys that say Nokia is pretty good in this. A lot of it is figuring out, you know, exactly, you know, where these things are made and all of that. I think this is going to be the issue that you just brought up is not going away. You know, the whole issue of what Apple is now dealing with, and they're taking some PR steps, and one would hope some other steps as well to shed some light in this subject. So, you know, I think this year we're gonna hear a lot about this as people are digging into it. It's a meaty area for journalists as well to try to figure out, you know, how these things are made and what they're doing to the environment. The reality is making all of these electronics, and we're enjoying them in our homes, but they can do some pretty terrible things in other places, parts of the world.
Right.
And that's something we need to be conscious of.
Steve Fox, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
Steve Fox is editorial director and vice president of PC World. You can get to it at PCWorld.com. You can also get the magazine. Coming up, Russell Holley from Geek.com. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, the coming tsunami of slime in the presidential campaign. Journalist Joe Hagan says the emergence of super PACs has changed the game, bringing an unprecedented flood of special interest money to fund opposition research and negative ads. Hagan's article was published in New York Magazine. Join us.
Terry Gross in Fresh Air coming up at 12 noon right here on 89.7 NPR News. The weatherman full of good cheer. For this time of year, mostly sunny today with a high of 59 expected. Tonight, showers are likely late, a low of 46 overnight. Then on Wednesday, the first day of February, showers likely in the morning, then gradually becoming sunny at a high of 54 degrees. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, tomorrow night's low 34. And by Thursday, sunshine again and a high of 49 degrees. Currently, we have 53 degrees at our studios here on the OSU campus. You're invited to join Kappa, WOSU, and Capital Crossroads SID for a special screening of Columbus Neighborhoods, Franklinton, downtown, at the Ohio Theater, 2 weeks from today, Tuesday, February 14th. The program begins with the Mighty Morton Organ pre-show at 11:30 a.m. Pre-sale tickets include a free box lunch and a chance to win tickets to the Broadway series production of Memphis. For tickets to the screening, call Kappa at 614-469-0939 or visit columbusneighborhoods.org. Either way, you're in for a good time.
Remember Dick Tracy's two-way radio wristwatch he used to communicate to police headquarters? James Bond wore a digital watch with a built-in satellite link. Do you remember those from the movies? But the rise of the cell phone meant the end of the wristwatch. They didn't figure that into their plot development, or so it seemed, until now. Joining us again on Tech Tuesday to talk about the best new gadgets, including a smartphone-connected wristwatch, is Geek.com tech blogger Russell Holley. Welcome back, Russell.
Thanks for having me back, Ann.
So the MetaWatch is what it's called. Tell us, it's a wristwatch. It's wirelessly connected to your Android phone. Tell us what it can do.
It actually works with both the Android phone and the iPhone.
Oh, okay.
And there's two different designs. There's one design that is all screen, where it's just an LCD display on the watch. And there's another that is a more classic-looking watch, where it actually has, you know, an hour hand and a minute hand, and two smaller screens on either side of the hands to show you some of the same information.
How big is it?
It's the same size as a normal wristwatch. You know, it's very, both of these are, you know, when you set them side by side with a normal watch, there's almost no difference.
And it tells time.
It does a very good job of telling time.
It seems kind of small to me. How does it display in a way that overcomes its size?
So the number one reason that we pull a phone out of our pocket when we are in a meeting or driving or doing any of these things that, you know, just these quick glance things are our notifications. When we get an email, when someone sends us an instant message or a text message, or, you know, when we get some small, a message from Twitter or from Facebook, you know, any of these small things that would cause us to, you know, stop what we're doing or distract us, you know, in the case that we were driving or in a meeting, and pull out our phone and take a look. These are the kind of things that get sent to the MetaWatch. And you can just glance at your wrist when the notification happens. Instead of a vibration or a sound that comes from your pocket, you can get a small vibration on your wrist, and you just glance down at your watch, and the information will scroll by.
It's a little more discreet then.
It is. It's a little more discreet, and it's a lot more efficient if you're, you know, in the middle of a big project, or if you're multitasking, or if you're driving. I stress the driving part a lot, because that's the one that I use it the most when I'm driving. It's just perfect if I'm getting a text message or if I'm getting, you know, an email or something. I don't have to look down at my phone. My hands are already on the steering wheel, so I can glance very quickly at my watch and know that, you know, that the information is still being delivered to me.
Russell Holly, tech blogger at geek.com, is with us right now. If you have a question or comment, we are talking about the MetaWatch. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you could email us at allsides@wosu.org. But if you have other questions, if you're a regular listener, you know that Russell seems to be able to answer anything you ask. So we'll take anything. According to the creators of MetaWatch, they've been working on this idea since 2006. So, all right, so that's six years that they've been working on it. Why has it taken so long for something as seemingly simple as a smartphone-connected watch to come out?
Well, there's a lot of components that go into making this work right, and one of the big things is making sure that it's not bound to a specific device. If you have a watch like this that only works with one kind of phone, then it creates a limitation. And so a big part of the information delivery is making sure that everyone can use it for every kind of phone. And that's something that the MetaWatch has done a very good job with. You know, Android phones, iPhones, all of the information that's gathered from these devices can be sent to the watch in a way that doesn't affect your daily use. And the watch, because the watch is connected to your phone at all times, it has to be able to last. You know, you can't, your watch can't run out of batteries in the middle of the day. That's just not going to work. So they had to come up with a way to make it so that it was easy to use, and it could be used everywhere.
It sounds really cool, it's just a couple hundred dollars, about as much as your average smartphone costs when you buy a two-year contract. So I know you try this stuff out for a living, but is it worth it to the ordinary lover of all things tech?
It was definitely worth it for me to pick up one of these as a personal device, because you know I am constantly connected to my cell phone, and I do have all of my communication come through, you know, my smartphone, and it is an open development platform, which means that people who do not work for MetaWatch can, you know, develop new things for it, just like with our iPhones and with our Android phones, where people can write apps for the phones and have it do things. The same thing can be done with the MetaWatch. And so I'm also working with a couple of developers who are doing some really cool things with the MetaWatch right now, the next of which being the ability to display directions from turn-by-turn navigation on your wrist. So if I'm, you know, walking through New York City, which I do a lot, or if I'm driving, instead of having to glance down at my phone for the next set of directions or having to, you know, mount the phone on my
I can't hear you. I just lost you. And I don't know what happened. But if you want to call us back, Russell Holly will call us back. Yeah. We'll have to get Russell Holly back. And if you want to queue up to talk to Russell, as I said, he usually can answer anything. Oh, I think he's back already. Russell, are you there? Nope. Okay. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go online and go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page if you want to do that. We are talking about, and hopefully we'll continue to talk about when I get Russell back, the MetaWatch. It's a wristwatch that is wirelessly connected to your Android phone or your iPhone. It sounds a little bit like Dick Tracy-ish. Or maybe something James Bond would wear. Now you too can feel like Dick Tracy and James Bond. 614-292-8513 is the number to call, though. We're still trying to get back with Russell Holly, tech blogger at geek.com. This happens. This has happened once before, so I don't know. I don't know what it is. We'll just get Bob on the phone and just chat with Bob. Hi, Bob. You're on the air. Welcome to the show. I need to talk to somebody.
Sure. So, I'll talk to you. I'll tell you the questions I was going to ask.
Okay.
Wondered if there's a monthly charge in addition to the $200 rough cost he's estimated. And I also am wondering if you can read the entire text message when you receive it, or if you're just getting the little notification that you have one from John Doe.
Russell, I think you're back with us. Did you hear both questions?
I heard both questions.
Great.
There is no monthly charge to use the service. It is, you know, it's part of an application on the phone that sends the information to the watch directly. And if you get a long text message, what happens is you get a vibration to alert you that the notification has happened. And then very slowly, the text message starts to scroll by almost like a stock ticker.
So that's how they keep it large enough to read.
Exactly.
Okay.
And are these available now, or is this just in development?
The MetaWatch is available on their website. It's MetaWatch.com, and you can get either the classic design or the digital design.
What's the difference?
The digital design has the full screen, like I said, whereas the classic version has the hour hand and the minute hand. And the screens are a little smaller on the classic version, but it looks much more like a traditional watch.
Okay.
Bob? Okay, thanks. Yep. Yeah, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. 614, tune in, standing in for Russell Holly there for a second. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. I've got Russell Holly, tech blogger at geek.com on the phone. So if you have a question or comment for him, we are talking about the MetaWatch. Younger people have mostly stopped wearing watches, and you said you rarely wear a watch, too. So what do you think the odds are that people from, say, the generation that's comfortable with watches will think nothing of it, but what are your sense about, Russell, about the younger generation picking up on it?
Well, this was something that I really had to think about when I was first interviewing the CEO of MetaWatch and trying it out for myself, because I never wear wristwatches. I have a watch that I wear, you know, just kind of as an accessory when I go to press events or something like that. But, you know, in my day to day, I never put a watch on, and the MetaWatch really changed that, because it made it so I didn't have to constantly dig my phone out of my pocket and check it every 20 seconds. You know, every time a message came, I could look down at my phone. I could look down at my watch instead of having to pull my phone out of my pocket.
Before we move on, we're going to be talking about custom fitted earbuds. But before we do, we have an email from Jan. She wanted to, she says she has a Pan Digital Android. She received one for Christmas, thinking it would get all the Android apps, but it uses a Get Jar, and it appears to not really connect with the Android app universe. This seems very cynical and only a sneaky way to sell this tablet. How can I download more apps? Thanks, Jan from Powell.
That is definitely an unfortunate thing that happened with a couple of different devices that were sold, where they didn't, you know, communicate with Google to get the Android market put on those devices. And GetJar does a really great job for some apps, but definitely not the you know, vast universe that is the Android market. The solution for that is not an easy one. There is usually a way to, you know, to kind of shoehorn the Android market onto those devices, but because the devices weren't certified by Google, it causes some issues. The best thing you can do is to try and do some research and see if there's a set of step-by-step instructions for your device specifically. And the easiest way to search for that, I think, would be, you know, to specifically include the name of your device and then Android market when you were to search it, you know, online. And typically you'll find step-by-step instructions for how to do exactly that.
Let's turn to earbuds. Another new product you tested at the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas were the custom-fitted earbuds called Sculpted Ears, EERS, or SonoFit, from a company called Sonomax. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Sonomax Technologies. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. You have a video on YouTube right now that demonstrates the process, but tell us how it works.
Yeah, I actually just posted the article on geek.com. Okay. For the ears, my complete review of them, which includes the video. But what these are, you take this box, you know, just like you would buy normal headphones, and it includes, you know, you take the headphones out of the box, it includes this additional headset with these cartridges on the side, and you take them, you place these cartridges in your ear and snap the two buttons that are on the side, and for the next 5 minutes, the headphones are, you know, the earbuds are in your ears being custom fitted to your ears specifically.
So what's it made out of? What are you putting in your ear?
So what you feel going in your ear are actually normal silicone earbuds, just like, you know, any other set of earbuds. But these are a little different in that they act kind of like a bladder for this solution that gets pumped in to to seal, you know, the device to your ear. And what basically happens is it this process fills the bladder with a set of chemicals that solidify when they touch. It's a two-part solution. Mm-hmm. And after about 5 minutes of slowly pushing this stuff into the bladder, which will push it a little tiny bit deeper into your ear, they solidify and create a custom set of earbuds that are only going to ever work for you. And they, you know, perfectly seal in your ear when you put them back in.
How does it stop short of going into the inner ear or, getting in too far?
These guys have had a lot of practice in making sure that they've covered as many ears as possible. And I've seen the process of it, you know, filling the ears done over and over and over again. And there's never been any more than about a half an inch or 3/4 inch, you know, depth into the ear. It doesn't really go in that much further than normal earbuds, but what it does is fill the ear cavity so that when you put them in, it seals, you know, all the external sounds and allows just the music to come through.
And they cost about $200.
They cost about $200. It's definitely more than you would see for a normal set of earbuds, but these are so comfortable. I was able to sleep with them in my ears, you know, on a flight. I was able to go jogging them with them in my ears and never have them come out. They are, you know, by far the most comfortable set of earbuds I've ever used.
And they're easy. It's an easy process to do.
Yeah, you put the machine on your head, and it's 5 minutes where you're not allowed to talk. You really shouldn't move a whole lot while it actually fills the bladder so that it takes shape to your ears. But once that's it, you have just a normal set of earbuds.
And where are these sold?
These are being sold through a couple of different electronic stores. You can find them on Amazon. There are select Best Buy stores that have them, but not all of them. Most of the places you're going to find are going to be online.
Okay, so that's and it's called the Sculpted Ears, EERS. Everything has to be catchy. Or Sonofit from a company called Sono. Am I pronouncing it right? Sonomax or Sonomax?
Yeah, Sonomax.
Sonomax Technologies. Russell Holley, thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Russell Holley's a tech blogger at geek.com. If you want to see that video, they can go to geek.com, right, Russell?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Check it out. Next Tuesday, who knows what we'll be talking about. But thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus. Streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from Marburn Academy, a leader in ADHD and dyslexic education, hosting a community parent seminar titled Correcting Persistent Spelling Errors, Tuesday, February 7th at 7 p.m. More at marburnacademy.org.